You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. New from Moultrie Mobile, the Feed Hub offers first-of-its-kind cellular connection and control for nearly any spin cast feeder on the market. When used with the Moultrie Mobile app, you can monitor feed and battery levels, run feeders on demand, receive alerts when feeders are clogged, and remotely adjust feeding times. The Feed Hub is ideal for anyone who maintains feeders. Remove the guesswork and save time by planning feeder maintenance before you drive to your hunting property. For more information, visit MoultrieMobile.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the No Lowballers podcast. I'm your host, Logan Medish of High Caliber History, and as always, I'm joined around the table by a colorful cast of characters. And today, this episode, it really, really is a very colorful cast of characters.
Emphasis on character.
Exactly. And you all know Alan from Gunbroker because he's my character that's here most often. But we have members of the first family of firearms media here. A lot of alliteration there. First family of firearms. We have Tom and Ryan Gresham. Guys, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for being with us.
I'm sorry, who are you?
if you figure it out, you let me know.
And so it starts, just like that. Boom.
That's right. People who don't know who you guys are have been living under a rock. I mean, really, there's no other way to put it, Alan?
They might not have the internet or television or print.
Or radio.
We also send post-its. It's okay.
We do all the things. How do you like to watch or listen to things? We do that.
We will send you a paper airplane if we have to, right?
We'll send somebody to knock on your door and talk to you about it.
And if you don't like listening to it that way, we do that still, too.
Right.
There you go.
You're more than welcome to pay us to not talk to you, right?
Ooh, I'm liking this.
Yeah. It's probably more profitable.
It probably would be.
Production costs are really low.
That's true.
So there's that.
That's true. All you need is room tone, nothing else.
It's a new podcast called Room Tone.
Yes. You joke, but now someone's going to do it, and they're going to make a fortune.
There was a time when on jukeboxes, you could actually put a quarter in and get 3 minutes of silence.
Really?
Seriously.
That's actually really cool.
Because you're just tired of that junk everybody's been playing, right?
Right.
Going, oh, yeah.
They need that these days for those guys who load up the touch tones with Creed for like half an hour and leave the bar.
Yeah. There's a special place in hell for them, you know?
But you know what's better than Creed on the jukebox for half an hour?
Anything.
Gun Talk on Sundays.
Gun Talk on Sundays, yes.
Oh, nice segue, dude.
Yeah.
That's where it all started.
You pulled it back together.
I guess it started before that, but...
Oh, yeah. I was just telling him, when I started doing outdoor TV, it was with my dad, Gritz Gresham, mm-hmm. and we were shooting 16mm film, and the audio was on reel-to-reel recorders for the American Sportsman TV show in the 60s with Bing Crosby, you'll love this, and hunting with Bruce Jenner.
That's real.
I kid you not.
Yeah. Wow. What were they hunting?
Everything, but
jokes.
It's really hard to see. Yeah.
Too many jokes.
You could have waited like one or two beats after that. ducks, deer, everything all over the world.
And the best part is if you think about it as a hunting show, and they're doing this old school, so you have like an 8-person crew in the duck blind.
Yeah. Right.
And they're like, we're not trying to kill anything.
Or trying to sneak up on a deer.
Right. With a guy in a boom mic.
Good luck. Yeah. Exactly. Totally right.
Reel to reel. And a boom mic.
And nobody's wearing Sitka, so I don't know how you could have pulled it off. I mean,
they're smoking cigarettes, it's like, what are you talking about? Scent control.
Right. And smoking cigarettes, and they're also, because it's very timely, we can tie it in, and drinking Miller Lite. Right?
Yes,
because
right.
That's another thing that you would never be able to get an alcohol brand to sponsor something hunting related, and yet your dad, your granddad, Gritz Gresham, did ads for Miller Lite, right?
Oh, yeah. It's not just sponsor. I mean, he was on the ads themselves.
Tastes great, less filling.
You're watching the NFL, and you see Bubba Smith, Dick Butkus, and Gritz Gresham.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was one of those athletes, and The stories of the outtakes that you never heard about,
yeah,
you can just imagine getting a bunch of retired jocks together. And when they were shooting these commercials, they were really drinking beer. This was, I mean, and it would go on for hours and hours and hours.
So they're drinking beer, and they're on take 40 of a TV commercial shoot.
And it's not getting any better.
And what happens if you drink beer for 4 hours?
You
have to pee.
Yes,
it's a stampede to the bathroom. And you get run over by Bubba Smith. This actually happened.
True story, huh?
Yes.
Oh,
so
my goodness.
There's that, you know. So, oh, it was great. Fun stories. And there are outtake reels that exist that are not in public. But they are there. So, yeah, the funny stories. But, yeah, Dad was one of the first gun writers, outdoor writers. And then I grew up doing that. And then by the same token, I was writing for all the magazines and editing magazines, Outdoor Life, Field & Stream, Sports & Field, writing for all those. And then Ryan ended up doing the exact same thing I did when he was young. I said, here, hold this fish. Yep. Hold this gun. Yep. I need somebody to hold up this so I can take a picture of it. And then he finally turned around and said, here, you take a picture of me. And it's like, I don't know that you actually ever made a conscious decision to do this.
I think I was on the cover.
Just Alan was smart. He turned you down so he couldn't hear you.
Did I mess it up?
No, you're good. Keep going.
All right. I think I was on the cover of Alaska Magazine as a kid, wasn't I?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you were, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, that's, you know,
photo shoots.
You can get around child labor laws if you're not paying them.
That's right.
This is true. You know, and forced labor of your own children is perfectly okay.
There you go.
And so I started, you know, catching on to all those little things early on, just continuity director as a 10-year-old and all this stuff. It was fun.
And now he's got his own range studios, big TV studios, classrooms, edit suites, and a fabulous facility, 17,000 square foot building facility where people can come and shoot and take part in all that stuff.
And you're a filmmaker now too, as we saw around
Oh,
Christmas.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, if you're listening to this, you should probably look up the Gun Talk Christmas special or
yes.
Gun Talk Zombie special. We did a couple ones.
The Christmas special was so good.
Oh yeah.
And to the credit, my favorite part of the Christmas special is all the outtakes at the end.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Yeah, watch it through the credits.
Yes,
yeah.
Definitely watch it through the credits. It was so good. And I loved all of your Photoshopped movie posters. You know,
those are fantastic.
Well, except for KJ as Elf in the tights. I'm still traumatized over that.
A little uncomfortable with that. Yes.
Yeah. Because here's the thing. That wasn't Photoshop. That's Ryan's actual outfit. Or Kevin's actual outfit.
Right.
Well,
yeah. Right.
What you don't know is he wears that to work every day.
Yeah. So they thought it was a costume. It's not a
KJ,
costume.
I believe it, right?
The only thing Photoshopped was the hat because there was no flat brim.
There's that.
We did do a flat brim with the hat on top of it.
That's true.
Yeah,
that is true.
It was good.
True.
I mean, and there were like call outs to all of these Christmas movies from, you know, Home Alone and Christmas Vacation and a lot of Die Hard in
yep.
there.
Mm-hmm.
And I did like at the end where you brought out the tactical Red Riders.
Yes.
That was pretty awesome.
Well, those Red Riders are crazy. So that was Box, Jared Grove mm-hmm. from Caldwell said, "What are you guys doing?" And we put him into the movie and stuff because I got an idea. I'm going to bring something down. I mean, he assembled these Red Riders that had, I mean, inert silencers on them, handrails, optics packages. I'm going, dude, how much does this Red Rider cost? He goes, that'd probably be about $1,500
on a $30 Red Rider.
Right.
You know?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Totally.
Well, you know,
because that's what we do.
Right. Well, and you know the old adage: you're supposed to spend, you know, like three times as much on the glass as you do on the gun.
That's
so,
right.
You know, you're just following the rules,
well,
right?
And it cracked all of us up because we had literally just been at the Daisy Factory doing
yes.
our Christmas episode on the Red Rider.
Right.
So suddenly, all these tacked out Red Riders were like, oh, we should have done that.
Right.
That would have been so much cooler. Ryan gets all the fun.
That was all Box. He brought it down, and we were just stunned.
So
how
did
cool
you really
were.
Crawl through the ventilation shaft?
I can't believe how good that looked. If you saw what it actually was, you'd go, that's not going to work. That's going to look like crap.
Were you crawling through tinfoil-lined boxes?
I'll tell you, because we are – so, yeah – my dad was kind of alluding to our facility, Range Ready Studios in South Louisiana. But because we're in South Louisiana, you may have heard that we have hurricanes down there. So we have these custom floodgates that are built out of aluminum that you put in front of doorways if there's like a storm coming. Never had to use them, but we had to fabricate them. And you put those together and make these little hallways and Okay. And then some duct tape.
I mean, duct tape fixes everything.
Yeah. Yeah. You know.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it worked really well. It sounded good, too. It sounded like, you know, your kong kong kind of like hollow. Right.
Well, I mean, it's really not that big of a stretch away from Bing Crosby smoking a Pall Mall while the sound guy follows him through. I mean, it's not radically different.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's
if we really
almost
think
the
about
same
it.
Thing.
Yeah, it's practically the same thing.
It's exactly the same, only completely different. You know?
So, but yeah, we do have this facility, and it's open to the public as far as running classes and events. We got Chris Reno on staff, so he's running a lot of the classes. And pistols, rifles, we're hosting special media events, special like experience classes. We just did the Surefire Low Light experience with pistols. So we have a 4,000 square foot shoot house. We have three outdoor ranges, all on site. It's 10 acres, 17,000 square foot building with our studio and classroom and edit suites and all that stuff. So it's for the industry, it's a content creation mecca. Yeah. I mean, we're trying to be like the Bristol, Connecticut to what ESPN is, that whole deal, and have this destination that you have to come
without the layoffs.
But for the consumer, when you have these special experiences, it's like, okay, we're going to have Springfield Armory in here, and you're going to get to shoot with Rob Latham. Or right. We're going to have Ruger come in, and everybody gets to shoot their new cool gun.
And maybe you get to keep the gun. It depends on the class.
Some of them you get to keep the guns you get to train with.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
I hesitated too long on the Colt Gold Cup one, and
that
was
amazing.
Out, and I was like,
yeah. We have some more coming.
Curse my hesitation.
We just released or just posted it. There's going to be a tourist experience in Caleb Giddings. You guys know Caleb.
Yep.
He'll be there. We're going to have some other trainers come in, and all the ammo's provided, so you don't have to worry about that.
Nice.
So it's going to be pretty cool.
Nice. So, I mean, that'll be a good time. I assume very revolver-centric.
They're
going the whole product line.
Wow. This is product line stuff. So this is more the GX4.
Gotcha.
You know, that stuff.
So can you talk about the 5 thing?
Oh, well, the 5-7 Fest is not open to the public. Okay. But we are doing a 5-7 Fest that's a media event. So all to do with the 5-7 cartridge, most of the makers of, you know, 5-7 guns, suppressors that are rated for 5.7.
Now I know who's been buying all the 5.7 off Gunbroker.
Yeah, right. There you go.
Both boxes.
Yeah. Pewter Fox 59 at LSU. I know exactly who that user is now.
That's it. That's me. Yeah, and Fiocchi. So we'll have probably about 10 to 12 different companies, and we'll have 10 to 12 different media outlets there covering 5.7 Fest. We'll have some cool stuff going on. We'll have like a phantom high-speed camera capturing some really cool
very
footage.
Cool. Very cool.
I think you need an arms historian there to talk about the history of the cartridge.
Yeah, it's like 3 weeks old. I mean, it's a lot of history there. It's
history's
like
history, you know. What we're doing today is history tomorrow, Tom, you know.
It's all subjective.
Did you write that down like on something? It's like, you know.
We have the T-shirts and that.
History is history, quote.
Right.
That's right. History is stuff.
Today's happenstance is tomorrow's history.
That's exactly right. So that's so much more eloquent than is old stuff.
Speaking of history, you know, obviously, you know, Grit's doing all the Saturday morning outdoor shows, you know, all the Kurt Gowdy stuff when it was a mainstream and hunting was a popular thing to see on TV, to now where, you know, we can kind of control our own content through streaming and the digital services. We've got this period in the middle where it pretty much disappeared. Mm-hmm. There just wasn't anything. And I mean, that's kind of the era where you fought the fight to try and keep firearms and hunting and defensive in the mainstream in any way you could. And, of course, Gun Talk Radio really dominated that. So talk to us a little bit about the history of the radio show.
Well, you know, 29 years ago at SHOT Show, I had a conversation at a cocktail party, which I probably don't remember. But that's a whole different thing.
But actually, tell us all about it.
Yeah. So it was a conversation with Alan Gottlieb from the Second Amendment Foundation. He said, you know, and I said, yeah, we got to do something together, Alan. He said, well, have you ever thought about doing radio? No, I've never been on radio. So we got to do radio. 6 weeks later, I had a radio show. It's one of those three most expensive words you can say with guns or anything else. Might as well.
You know, he's not wrong.
He's not wrong.
He is not wrong.
He's not wrong. You know, I'm sure there are a number of people who've gotten married in Vegas because of those
good
three
Lord.
Words.
Yes,
you know?
It's so true.
Or
so
someone won a gun broker auction.
Yes.
With those three words. Yeah.
So we started the radio show. It now runs almost 30 years later. We're running on 270 stations and I guess Apple lists us as the number one podcast in the whole hobby category. Not just guns. So, I mean, we're by far the largest gun podcast. Well, we started putting it on the internet before there was a podcast, because before there was an iPod.
Right.
But you mentioned trying to get coverage for, you'll love this story. And I've created a lot of TV shows for different people. And one of them was Personal Defense TV. Mm-hmm. There were no personal defense shows about that. And they said, you know, we need a, I was working for Guns and Ammo and those guys, and they said, hey, we just had a hole open up. We need to fill a hole. And I was doing the radio show. Because I was doing the radio show and people call the show all the time, I knew what people were talking about, what they were doing. A lot of times, years before the manufacturers figured it out. Mm-hmm. And I said, we got to do a show about personal defense. We'll call it Personal Defense TV. And they went, okay. And I said, you know, we're going to go shoot most of it at Gunsight. They said, well, okay. And I said, and this is who we need to have. Because firearms instructors are really good on TV. Because all they do is stand in front of crowds and deliver the message.
Right.
It's so easy. But the great part here is, so I said, well, we got to find sponsors, right? So we go to a famous company that will remain nameless that makes a lot of polymer pistols. And
that actually doesn't narrow it down. So
not
you're
now.
Safe.
Not
you're
anymore.
Safe,
yeah. But it did it then.
It did at
right?
the time. And their thing was...
The only thing they make are polymer pistols.
Okay. Thank you. So, but the funny part was when they came back and said, well, we can't sponsor a show about shooting people. But, you know, we don't make guns for shooting people. I said, that's the only thing that your guns are used for.
and then I had those law enforcement contracts and no people?
And then I had to explain, you do understand, we're not actually going to be shooting people on
not
TV
real people,
here.
Right?
Oh, well, I'm out.
Well, but I do think, and we may be getting a lot closer to it, the first people who can figure out a way to actually shoot people on TV, you know, it's like gladiator thing, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah. I mean, they're going to win. They're going to win all the ratings right there.
Well, you basically have that on YouTube. Yeah. And it's funny because we have this show, First Person Defender, where we put people into regular, you know, into scenario-based training, force.
Love that show. His creation.
And the way we do that show and put it out is we write the titles like a news headline. Mm. You know, man protects family at gas station robbery or whatever. And that's the scenario. But people will click on it and... Every once in a while, they go, oh, man, I thought I was going to get to see someone shoot somebody.
Like, this isn't live leak, but
right.
you know.
Yeah. wait a minute. These are just paintball rounds? What do you think we're actually like?
What fun is that, right?
All right, Alan, welcome to First Person Defender.
Today you
good
get
luck.
To,
You're going to die.
I'd like to say I'm disappointed that society thinks that, but I'm not surprised.
Yeah
there's that.
Have you met people?
Yeah.
We have had so many interesting situations where people who think they're really geared up, they're ready to go, you put them in that self-defense situation, and the brain just turns to mush in the middle of the thing. It's like, and we go, okay, why'd you shoot that person? And they look at you like, I don't know. Who is the good guy and who is the bad guy here? I don't know. I said, we probably ought to do a little training here. Yeah. And let's work on this.
Well, I mean, speaking of Gunsight, they tell you straight up that the biggest weapon's between your ears. The gun's just the tool. The weapon's mm-hmm. between your ears.
Yeah, and that's really all this is. But we created an acronym for I Never Thought of That, NTOT. And people have these NTOT moments. And how many times have you gone up to them right after the scenario and you go, this, this, and this, and they go, huh, two things. It happens so fast, and I never thought of that. Says, well, that's what training is about, so you can think about that before you actually get into this situation.
Yeah. You can practice getting attacked. Like, right. You know, in real life, you don't get that. But like, hey, let's run this again. Let's practice this. I mean, we won't, you know, actually hurt you, but it's going to feel real because you're in a shoot house or you're actually in a parking lot and we're coming up to you and you need to react and think through this. I think one of the problems that I see on the show, recurring problems, is people are unwilling to get mean or be rude or just, I mean, or at the risk of being rude, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're not being rude.
They don't
want to
embarrass themselves.
Yes.
Right.
Is it Gavin DeBecker, The Gift of Fear, talks about that, how so many people end up on the wrong side of violent situations because they don't want to appear mean or cold or unfriendly, where the lizard brain is screaming at them to get the hell out of there, but they don't want to be mean.
They won't just cross the street because I wouldn't want those young men over there to think that I thought there was something bad over here. You go, well, you know, you got to listen to that thing. When the alarm bells are going off in the back of your head.
There's a reason.
Or there's the whole, like, you know, you're in a Walmart and there's a shooting that breaks out and they go, I thought it was fireworks. I'm like, how could you think that was fireworks? What's happening is it's like their brain's going, that couldn't really be what I know it is, right? Because that would be bad.
We used to play a game in newspapers. And, you know, you've got to have dark humor to keep sane in that business anyway. But every time there was a, you know, some form of attack story, if they said the phrase, he came out of nowhere, or I don't know where they came from, it was fine. And a dollar went into the pot. Because everyone wanted to play, put a dollar in the pot.
Right.
The first time a news article would come out that they didn't say that, we bought pizza. Because it would always be the pot would be big enough to order a newsroom pizza because everybody said the same
thing. Which goes look to at it, situational awareness.
Exactly where I was going with that.
Yeah.
And you'd look at where the attack happened. You're like, how? What do you mean you didn't see them? It's an empty parking lot. There's no cover for 100 yards.
If you walk through the parking lot staring at your phone with your earbuds in, or as I call them, the sensory deprivation devices, you can be surprised by a marching band. You know, it's like, okay, I never saw it coming. Yeah, no kidding. What was it they say at Clint Smith says, if you look like food, you will be eaten.
Yeah. Mm. Yep. My favorite Clint Smith is, I wouldn't carry a 380 if I had room in my ass for a tugboat.
He does say things you're thinking, I think that means something, but I'm actually not sure what.
I don't care what it means. I thought it was funny.
It's a great line.
I love Clintisms, don't you?
It is a great line. And I used the food one with my late mother-in-law many a time because she would be the one who would like go into the store and like hold her purse right up to her chest, basically screaming, you know, if you try and grab this, I'm going to drop it and faint. And I'm like, if you look like food, you know, if you look like food, you're going to get eaten.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Just walk confidently and you're going to be left alone. And she lived in a town like 4,000 people in Nebraska, so it's not exactly like it was a high crime environment, but she's,
you know, and what Clint does to spin this all the way back around is he's a really good, he's a good trainer, but at heart, he's a good teacher. He gives you things that stick in your head, and you get the same thing with Chris Serino on your staff. There are people who have a way of teaching things that really stick with you, and it may be a phrase, it may be a way of saying something, you know, whatever it is, but later on, you come away from the class and you've got that voice in your head.
Yeah. I always find the great instructors, and I think it works well for our guests today, are usually good storytellers. Because when they can put the instruction into almost like a storytelling thing, like, you know, an example, like Eric Gelhaus is great at that. Ed Head was fantastic at that.
Yeah.
I think there's a correlation there between the storytelling ability and being an instructor that can figure out how you need to take the information in, and then I'm going to present the information in the way that you need it.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly right.
And so Chris is good at that, too.
Chris
has some really interesting phrases, too.
He's got a lot of background in law enforcement and in training law enforcement at the federal level and dealing with some most interesting people. You cannot be an air marshal without dealing with really interesting people who do some crazy stuff on airplanes.
Yeah.
I love the one where, you know, this guy's caused and Chris is a big dude. I mean, you guys know. And guy's causing a problem on the plane. He's getting rowdy and all that. And Chris goes over and leans over him and says, you need to stop that now. And the guy says, well, who are you? He says, I'm just a concerned passenger.
For now.
Okay.
Yeah, for now.
or the story of drawing your gun because you think something's going to happen while you're sitting in the airplane. Don't let anyone know you just drew your gun. And then, how do I get this thing back in the holster?
It's like the dog who chased his tail. He caught it. Now what?
Yeah,
now
that's right. You go,
now
we always practice drawing. We don't really practice reholstering without people noticing.
From deep concealment with people around you.
Yes.
Right. You're like, okay.
Just, you know what? Just put it in the seat back pocket back there. It'll be fine.
I haven't left iPads there or anything. That'd be a good idea. It's fine.
I always look for guns, though, because you never know. Just stuff happens there. So
I want to kind of tie it back to you guys being the first family of firearms media, and I'm curious to know, first, Tom, I'll ask you, and then Ryan, I'll ask you, so you can be thinking about it. You know, what is the biggest change, Tom, that you saw from, you know, going from working with your dad, Grits, as to, you know, and watching how he did things in the business to then when, you know, the kind of passes the torch to how things were working, you know, with you in the business? You know, what's some of the biggest change, good or bad, that you've seen? And then, Ryan, you know, the same, you know, how has it changed? What have you seen the biggest changes for good or bad as it has kind of gone generationally for you guys? Because that's a perspective that I don't think anyone else in the industry can give us.
Yeah. Well, when I started, it was all magazines. That was all there was. So you had just print, and now there's not a lot of print left.
Yeah.
So you got the delivery mechanisms have changed, and what people wouldn't think about, but for me, I think about this, is the lead times have changed.
Yeah.
It used to be you would send an article to a magazine, and it would get published 3 or 4 or 5 months later. And now our lead times is measured in minutes.
Well,
if nothing, the immediacy of it all, and we expect that to happen. Yeah. The idea that, there's something. Well, back in the old days, Elmer Keith, Jack O'Connor, they had this feud going, made up whatever it was, writing for the magazines. One would write an article, it would come out, and the other would write an article to answer it. Well, it'd be 3 or 4 months before it came out. Can you imagine that today?
Well, and as we were talking earlier with Chuck Rossby, the way AI is going, the articles are going to come out before we even know we need them.
Yeah.
So it'll be bout pacing.
That's right. It's going to say, you're going to need this tomorrow.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Right. Yeah, and I think, obviously, the internet, social media, and everyone having a platform and a channel, boy, there's pros and cons to that, right? There's pros because we can get a lot of different information out there. There's cons because the information is not fact-checked or curated.
Yep.
It's just all a bunch of stuff out there. And so everyone has a voice and a channel, and a lot of people go, well, I saw that on YouTube, or I saw this, or this guy said this, and he didn't like it. And I think that there's probably too much credence given to random people with channels or pages or whatever.
If they've got a big follower account, they must know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And it's usually the exact opposite.
And I think the problem is, to me, a lot of people see it or watch it or whatever, and then that's it. That's I'm like, but have you tried it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I know that this gun is crap because this guy said it was crap.
Right.
Or whatever. Like, or I know that this bullet doesn't penetrate or this thing won't work, and you go, but have you tried it?
I know.
And a lot of times they are absolutely factually wrong in what they know. That bullet always blows up when it hits deer and won't penetrate. Really? Well, here's pictures of like 500 dead deer killed with this bullet.
Yeah.
So as Steve Horney likes to say, at what point in the demise of the deer did the bullet fail?
Yeah, but I think the deer would like to argue that point with you.
But it can't.
But I saw it on YouTube, so it must be true.
So exactly. I think there's that. I think also just the expansion of the ways people consume. And I know personally for us at our media company, we started Guns and Gear 16 years ago, Guns and Gear Television. So I was in diapers on that show.
And he'll be on diapers when it goes off the air in 16
that's
years.
That's right. Fingers crossed.
Well done.
But he was kind of like the good old days of, we have a show. It's on Thursdays at 7 p.m. Go watch it. But now it's, we put it out there, but now we have to re-edit it because we have to post it onto Facebook and YouTube and Roku and Apple TV and X and all these different platforms. And then we need to do a 20-second teaser to put in a reel or a story. And it's like, it's I'm sorry, but it's freaking exhausting to go, but that's how you'd have to do it, because you have to give it people however they want to consume it. Here you go.
Right.
However you like to consume things. There you go.
And, so then I guess that makes you wonder, where do you think the whole media thing is going from in the future? And you can certainly be wrong, because, Tom, I can imagine probably 25 years ago, if someone told you magazines are going to be dead, you'd be like, I don't know about that.
Maybe 20 years ago, I would have said, yeah, you're right.
But at a certain point in your career, there's no way magazines are going away.
No, you're right.
And so, Ryan, what do you think?
Where's it headed?
Where's it headed next, for better or worse? Where's it headed next?
Well, I think that people, it's interesting, because I'm hearing just in the industry, there's been an ebb and flow of, the influencer thing is a big thing. And now lately I'm hearing a lot of companies say, we went pretty hard into the influencer thing, and now we're kind of backing off on that because we've been burned a lot of different ways by that.
Well, 15 years ago it was bloggers.
Right.
Yeah, same thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. Exactly.
Because there's no way to quantify what the hell is an influencer.
Right.
No.
Right.
And the thing is, as you say, they can't trust people, which if they can't, if the manufacturers, gun makers, ammo makers can't trust them to deliver an accurate message, perhaps the viewers shouldn't either.
Right.
Just or at least be a little bit more circumspect about who you put your trust in.
And I mean, don't get me wrong. There are people who have YouTube channels that do a really nice job and they have a good audience. But it's just, it's tough to vet and you're having to like vet it by yourself if you're a viewer. So, I mean, I think that that's part of it. I think, the other thing we've been talking about, last few days is kind of watching how in the gun world we had, you know, right now it's long range. Long range is like everything. Long range scopes, long range ammo, long range rifles, and it's PRS and it's huge. But except when you go, so there are like 100 million gun owners, and how many people participate in PRS? It kind of reminds me of three gun. It's, hey, dude, it's great. It's fun.
Right.
But as far as like, oh, this is the biggest thing ever. Dude, you're like, at the peak, how many people participate in three gun? It was like 5 to 8,000 people out of 100 million. Yeah. It's a 0.008%.
Cowboy action, same deal.
Cowboy
huge,
action.
Huge deal. Game. And they were actually, as you say, probably 2 to 5,000 people doing it. Yep. And then it cycles and then starts drifting back down.
Number one reason people own guns and always has been, always will be, is personal protection, self-defense, home defense, right?
Right.
Yep. Yep.
Which people who are delivering good, solid information about that will be able to continue the messaging because that's going to continue. And we have new people coming into that as they discover, as they wake up, as they watch the news and they go, holy cow, you know, honey, we probably ought to think about getting a gun. Are you watching what's going on in the news? And then it's now, and they buy a gun. First, we all have the same thing. People come up to you. They don't ever come up to you and say, where should I go get training? They always say, what gun should I buy?
Yep.
Right? Yep. They start off with the what gun should I buy. And then it's our job, everybody's job who's watching this, to say, let's talk a little bit about training.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Because you know, this just by buying a piano, you do not become a pianist.
No.
You know, and by buying a gun, you not do not become a gun fighter.
Yep.
To you know, to quote Jeff Cooper.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, guys, we could go on and on
and we do.
And we do. Yeah, that's why we're in this business, right? Yeah. But unfortunately, time constraints being what they are, we got to wrap it up. But
all right.
But, you know, Tom, Ryan, we really appreciate you guys taking some time out of your busy schedules to talk to us about the literal decades of industry knowledge in the gun media world that you guys have. I mean, it's no one touches you guys. It's and I'm not trying to blow smoke. I mean, I think we've all got such tremendous respect for what you've all done, you know, for three generations now. This podcast wouldn't be here if it weren't for your dad. I mean, and I don't
for him.
And for you and you, I mean, really, it's we proudly stand on your shoulders.
Well, we appreciate that, and you know the royalty checks are appreciated.
Well, we're shooting for number two on Apple. You know, we got realistic goals.
You can cash a check for 1 cent. So,
I am going to become a dozenaire.
There you go. All right, guys, thanks so much for joining us on this episode. Well, that's it for this episode of the No Low Ballers podcast. We appreciate all of you tuning in on all of the various platforms. We really appreciate you joining us for this ride each and every week. Make sure you're subscribed on your favorite platform. You can find us all of the videos on YouTube and all of your favorite podcasting platforms. Listen and make sure you're subscribed there. Leave us some likes and comments. We do read the comments. We do respond to them. We just really appreciate you guys tuning into the show each and every week because without you, there is no us. So thank you from the bottom of our hearts. That is it for this week, and we will see you right here next week on the next episode of the No Low Ballers podcast.